What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
All right, legends. I hope you're all doing okay. And thank you so much for joining me again for my show, What the Health. We have yet another week of exploring the weird and wonderful world of health, wellness and fitness. And for anyone that's new here, I'm Gabby Allen. I'm a social media presence, I would like to think, in the fitness scene. And I've been a personal trainer for nearly 10 years now because I'm old. But even still, I learn something new on this show every week. Each show, I'm joined by a range of guests to discuss the latest fitness trends and debunk myths to facts. And of course, give you advice on how to achieve your health goals. So if you have any wellness questions that you'd like to answer, like me to answer, drop a message on Instagram at WhatTheHealthShow. Give us a follow while you're there. And we do a little Q&A section at the end of each show. So drop them to me. And what do we have on today's show? I'm going to be joined by the amazing Paula Radcliffe, former British Marathon World Champion, and Dr. Faye Baghetti, neurology doctor and neuroscientist. But first of all, we are going to discuss one of the weirdest trends I've seen. No matter what anyone says, it's weird. In Mythbusters this week, we are going to be talking about mouth taping. Mouth taping and whether it's the key to a good night's sleep. And we are joined by Dr. Heather Darwell-Smith. Are you there, my love?
I am. Good morning.
Hello. Nice to see you. Looking fresh.
Thank you, as are you. I just want to just tell you, I'm not a doctor. It's really quite important that I say that.
You know what? You are to me, because we're going to talk about things that I don't know about. So, okay. So Heather Darwell-Smith is psychotherapist and sleep expert. So, mouth taping. This is weird to me. Have you heard much about it? Tell me, what is mouth taping for people that don't know?
Well, it's become quite a big TikTok trend, hasn't it? And lots of people are really, really raving about it as the thing to get a good night's sleep. And I think the idea behind it really is that you tape your mouth at night so that you become a nasal breather rather than a mouth breather. And there's lots of data that suggests that mouth breathing isn't helpful, that it does affect our teeth and our gum health, and it does affect our CO2 take up. There's lots to it. But like many of these things, it's complicated. And the idea that it can improve your sleep, well, I'm not convinced, I have to say, both anecdotally and looking at the science, the idea that it can improve your sleep, I can't see the evidence myself. I mean, would you try it?
No. I mean, I sleep with earplugs and an eye mask every night anyway, even if we were in like the death of silence. It's obviously just a habit thing for me, you know, like a comfort blanket kind of. But I just can't imagine having something so uncomfortable on your mouth. But I suppose maybe people have like started doing it for sleep apnea, maybe, you know, to like basically force yourself to breathe through your nose.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of really, and they're really, really small studies, like 15 people sort of size, that suggest that for mild sleep apnea, it's possibly helpful, because especially if you're using a CPAP machine to help your sleep apnea, you do want to be breathing through your nose. Mm. So there is something to that, but I really think that you need to work with your physician on what the best way to do that is for you, because you need to define, is it mild sleep apnea? You need to know that you have sleep apnea. Mm. And that's where I think it starts to become quite important, because the idea that it's a fix-all for everyone. I mean, we all have genetic face shapes, for example. Some people have an overbite on their mouth, which means that they might snore more. They have upper airway respiratory syndrome. And for people like that, it's not a good idea to be mouth taping. Mm. There's lots of reasons why you wouldn't do it that you might not necessarily know that you shouldn't do it.
It just sounds so dangerous to me. Like, what if you actually couldn't breathe and you were taped up? I mean, I suppose you'd probably wake up. But it just sounds crazy. Have you tried it?
I have tried it.
Have you?
I do tend to try most things that come along, because I'm infinitely curious about whether these things are okay or not. The thing about whether you can't breathe or not, the human body is quite amazing. You will take it off. If pushed to it, your body, you will automatically, almost unconsciously remove it if there's an issue. But I say that, hopefully. I did see a really scary TikTok with someone using duct tape on their mouth. And she's like, you, if you're going to do it, you really do need a porous tape that has got some breathability to it.
That's what my next question was. Can you recommend any specific tape? Not duct tape, guys. You get stuck yeah, together for good. Tape. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the surgical tape is probably the best way to go with it. And it's just a thin strip that comes down across the lips. And I would always recommend, if you are interested in it, then give it a go during the day. I'm really pro anything for sleep, trying during the day, because you get much more bang for your buck out of stuff that you do it during the day, which improves your sleep at night. So if you start to practice a breathing technique, do it during the day so you know what it feels like. You can trust your body and think, okay, I like this. I felt the benefits of this during the day and I might want to try it at night. But that can take some time to lead up to, as to, right, okay, I've tried this for a little bit during the day and now I'm going to switch it tonight.
Sorry, just to clarify, do you mean try like during a nap in the day or just when you're awake with the tape on?
Just generally during the day, just so sit for 10 minutes and do some deep breathing with the tape across your mouth, just so you see what it feels like. Because your headspace is much more, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If you do this at night, it can be really anxiety inducing. I mean, you're putting something.
Yeah, it's a foreign object, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm very pro breath work for reducing stress, which ultimately will improve sleep. So anything you do, give it a try during the day. Use the little bit of tape, sit for 10 minutes and breathe and see how it feels. Just experiment. And then as you build up that practice, then if you want to try it at night, then try it. But I would always work during the day to the night rather than going straight to, I'm going to do this tonight, because that can be really, really anxiety inducing.
It's just throwing yourself in the deep end, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it might not actually work as well as it possibly could work if you are, as I said, throwing yourself in the deep end when you should practice makes perfect, right? Or practice makes better.
And that's a really big thing with a lot of stuff that goes with sleep. There's a lot of perfectionism tied up in our sleep. And the idea of, oh, it didn't work, I couldn't do it, that can start to run a whole script internally as well. And like I say, this is something that works for some people, but not for everyone. You're not going to know yourself straight off whether it's you or not, which is why, okay, if you're interested, give it a go during the day just to see what it feels like.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether I'll be trying it, but I might do. My sleep has actually improved a lot, but it's not my sleep. I don't have sleep apnea, not that I know of. But so I don't think I would need to try it. But I suppose if people are trying to get clear nasal passages during their sleep, then it could be something. But apparently it also can help strengthen your jaw. Which, yeah. I mean, I'm always going for a more sculpted jawline. So is that true or is it not true?
I'm always a bit sort of loath to go yay or nay on these things. But again, I dug into that one thinking, well, what's the mechanics of that? If you're taping that and your jaw's here, I mean, we know that a lot of people who have teeth grinding issues at night, we know that there's one that potentially the taping could help you reduce teeth grinding. But teeth grinding often is a stress response. So you could also argue that reducing your stress could reduce your teeth grinding. But whether it can strengthen your jaw, I haven't found the evidence, I have to say.
You know, thinking about it, maybe it's because if you're taping your jaw together, then taping your mouth together, then your jaw may not be moving as much. So it's just like keeping it in place and you're like clenching it. Do you know what I mean? So maybe that's something to do with it. So you're strengthening those muscles because they're just clenched the whole time.
They don't necessarily want you to be over-clenching.
Yeah.
Grinding.
Yeah, it's true. So do you think there's any risks associated with it? Like for me, what I first thought of was, what if you like swallow the tape, or what if it, you know, goes up your nose or something like that? Do you know what I mean? There's like so many risks to do with it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've got colleagues who are really, really anti the practice. They're really fervent, absolutely not. Risks. I think the biggest risk for me is if you've got an undiagnosed sleep issue and then you go down this route, you could make something worse and you're doing it quite unknowingly. So that's the thing where I'm sort of right. If you're going to try it, really do try it in a during the day.
Safe way.
Safe, you know what it is you're doing. I hadn't really thought about the idea you might choke on the tape, but that's a good point.
Always a pessimist, you see. So come on then, tell me what are your top tips then? If you think that you have like trouble with sleep apnea or like, let's forget about mouth taping for now. What would your first top tips go to?
If you think you've got sleep apnea, go and see your GP and get yourself referred for a sleep study to understand the nature of what that apnea is and what exactly is going on. The second piece often is diet related. Apnea, not always, but it's often very much related to our weight. So one of the key things will often be reducing your weight. The other thing is reducing alcohol and use of things like sleeping medication at night, because both of these relax the throat muscles and can make it worse. So those would be my three top tips. See your GP, look at your weight, and reduce alcohol and sleep meds at night.
Interesting about the sleep meds, because I think so many people rely on them, don't they?
Yeah.
Even just the herbal ones, I, as I said, I'm not the best sleeper. So sometimes if I'm awake and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, I'll just have a herbal Nightol. And maybe it's like doing the opposite of what I need it to do.
Well, it's a trick. I mean, there's something about feeling in control. It's like if I'm doing something,
placebo effect. Yeah.
And so again, that could feed into the piece about the mouth taping. I'm doing something, I'm taking control of the situation. But sleep meds are never, it's never real sleep. They all have an action to them. And they can, I mean, if you take something at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can often have a bit of a sort of hangover effect in the morning, a bit sort of groggy.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I always think, you know, I wake up and when my alarm goes off and I feel like I've been in a sleep, but then it takes me a lot longer to come back around almost.
Yeah, I mean, that can be many different things. I mean, alarm clocks are alarming. Because I mean, they can really wake us out of deep sleep. So you could be waking in what's called a state of sleep inertia, where you just feel really groggy, which takes time to pass. And that's not necessarily about poor sleep. It's about what phase of your sleep you've been woken in.
Okay, yeah, because the REM sleep is the shortest part, right? That's what you want. Yeah, no, sorry. Well, getting into
sleep,
it now.
Sleep is a night of two halves. The first half of the night, you get the most deep sleep. The second half, you get the most REM sleep. So they both have different durations. So early in the night, they're longer, and then later in the night, they're shorter.
Okay.
But what happens at the other end of the night when you're waking up and the alarm goes off, you could be woken out of REM or out of deep sleep. And that's what gets that really groggy feeling.
Right. I must be in deep sleep every day then, because that's how I feel.
Well, it's often the way we have that sort of, we drop into that last phase of sleep just before we wake up.
It's so annoying. Yeah. I'm like, I was just in a good sleep and now I'm like, oh, I've got to start my day. Oh, well, thank you so much. I've learned so much from you again. Thank you for coming on the show and, you know, telling us about mouth taping. I won't be trying it, but, you know, some people might do. I hope you have an amazing day, my love, and hopefully I'll see you again soon.
See you soon.
Love. Bye. So guys, I would love to know if you are going to try mouth taping. I suppose if you aren't a snorer, and maybe, actually, is it worse for snorers because you can't breathe through your mouth? I don't know, but I've had ex-boyfriends that snore and it's break-upable situations. So maybe we'll get some mouth tapes on them. It would be a great thing to just tape the mouths up forever. Anyway, we're going to talk about my exercise of the week. Calf raises. Something that I feel like we skip quite a lot, maybe just as women. You see men doing them all the time because, you know, obviously they can build their upper body so much quicker than the lower. But I do think that we should incorporate them into all of our training, because they, I mean, not only do they look cute when you've got your heels on and, you know, when you're, well, I suppose when you just got them out in general, but when you've got your heels on, they look good. But the calf raises strengthen the muscles, the tendons and the ligaments in your feet and ankles. So if you are somebody that struggles with ankle stability and that affects, like, you know, I find a lot of people have some sort of weakness in their ankles. So it can affect, you know, going over on yourself when you're running, or even in your squats and stuff, you might not feel that you have like the grounding that you need. And you probably could have more range of motion if they were just a little bit stronger. So calf raises are going to help you do that. They enhance your athletic performance with your explosiveness and your big power moves, you know, your big squats and your big jumps, like box squats, things like that. And also for your everyday movements, like me this morning, running for that bus. So yeah, get your calf raises in this week, guys, and I'll see you after the break.
FUPAR Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think you said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of their saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
And there's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You wanna go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag, and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can.
Oh no, they still make it, but I just don't. Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now. But at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, "Can I wear this out?" She's like, "Hola, how are you?" No.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
So joining me now is the incredible former Olympian Paula Radcliffe. Paula is a four-time British Olympian long distance runner. She's a three-time winner of the London Marathon and a three-time New York Marathon champion and a mother. How the hell have you done all of these things? You're amazing. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, let's talk about how life has been for you in retirement, because I know that you're still running for fun, right? So tell me everything.
Yeah, so as a sports person, I guess I already knew, or always knew, that retirement was going to come from the sporting career earlier than retirement does for
yeah.
most, and trying to plan for that. It's also not always a really happy time, and it is a time to look back and be proud of everything that you've achieved in your career, but it's not like you're ready just to sit down and do nothing and to sail off into retirement either. So it was kind of about making plans for my second career and thinking ahead to what I wanted to do there, and then within that thinking ahead to saving for my yeah. retirement further down the line. So I'm extremely grateful for the advice I got at the time. I actually set up a pension at the age of 19 and started paying into that as soon as I was earning from sports, because I was very conscious of the fact that at some age I might have to give up my sport and move on to doing something else as a career. So I wanted to make sure that I had the flexibility to take the time to find that second career in the way that I wanted to do that.
Makes note in my calendar to set up a pension, because I haven't done that yet. That is, it's like you basically have to set yourself up for two lives. You've got your sport life and then the afterlife. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been lucky, as you said at the beginning, because the sport that I do is something that I can carry on to any level afterwards. So I can still go out for a run now. I just don't time those runs because I don't particularly want to know how much slower I'm running than I used to. It's taken on a different purpose for me, and it's more my meditation time, if you like, my sorting myself out for the day.
Yeah, I love
clearing
that.
Things in my head, particularly when you're juggling a lot of family things as well. I kind of sort out a lot of problems when I'm on my run, and I'm known for coming back in the door and saying, right, everyone, listen, this is what we're going to do.
This is what's happening. I love that. So you said, you just said that you were given some great advice when you were a bit younger to set up that pension and all that. Mm-hmm. So you're used to being on track and focused, but when it comes to retiring, a lot of people, actually 1.2 million people in the UK, are not on course for minimum retirement lifestyle, which is a crazy figure, isn't it? Why do you think that is? Is it because we're not given the advice at school? Like, we're not taught to do our bloody taxes? We're not taught to open a pension?
Well, I think it's the advice, the advice out there around us, because to be honest, I would just be like any 19-year-old now. I wouldn't have thought about it. It was brought to me, and the advisors around me said, you need to start doing this now. My dad was very keen to point out that you're always kind of one injury away, and you can enjoy and relax and perform better in your sport if you know that you've kind of got a backup plan and you've got something else in place. So I think that was really key. And I think the best thing you can do now is just get some advice. So head to the Scottish Widows website. On there, they've got their retirement report that they do every year. And it shows, because it's a scary figure, that's actually 1.2 million more people this year than last year. So it's gone up from 35% to 38%. So it's growing, the number of people who aren't on track to be able to live their retirement as comfortably as they would like to and as they deserve to. So it is just about taking that advice and thinking about it a little bit more sooner than you probably would ordinarily, because you've got other things to worry about, like mortgages, like probably still paying off student loans, and there are lots of pulls on that, having children, things like that. So it's just about factoring that in and taking the best advice possible to make sure that when you do retire, in contrast to kind of being forced to retire from sport, it is something that you can really enjoy and make the most of.
So even though it might seem a little bit premature, just you're better off to be like ahead of the game than you get to like your mid 50s and you're like, oh shit, I haven't got any money in the bank.
In a sporting context, like you're doing a bit of training, a bit of preparation to make sure that when it comes down to it, you can really enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Preparation is key, right? You are the absolute founder of that. Okay, so even though you are retired, you've been working hard to launch your Marathon Academy, which is so exciting. How's that going?
That's really, really rewarding. That's given me a chance to kind of share the lessons that I've learned, the little pointers that I've kind of picked up over the years with the marathon community, and to join in their journey as well. And it's a great journey. I mean, I love the marathon. It's a tough event. And in Paris, in the Olympics, we're going to see that as well. But it really kind of epitomizes holding it together, staying focused through the tough times and enjoying the good times within the race. And I like to say every single person gets to that finish line of the marathon, having gone through the preparation, a little bit stronger, a person a little bit wiser, having learned a little bit more about themselves. And it's great to help people along that journey and kind of help them avoid some of the pitfalls and really enjoy those
peaks and troughs. You know what, I take my hat off to you. I can't believe how many marathons you've run in your lifetime, and I've only just done my second 10k the other day.
Well, you're only just starting out on it, but I guess you've still tapped into that camaraderie that I'm talking about. And I think that's what's so lovely in the big events, whether it be a 10K, whether it be a park run, or whether it be the London Marathon. It's the camaraderie amongst the other runners and the support in that community that makes it very unique and special.
Yeah. So my brother does marathons, and I go and watch him, and I'm just always in awe because of all these like crazy people doing this massive long run. But apparently they say that like the atmosphere, because I'm like, do you not listen to music or anything like that? But it's the atmosphere what keeps you going, and that's why, you know, you go and watch people and cheer them on, because it gives them that boost of confidence throughout.
It is, and for anybody who goes and watches and cheers on, thank you very much, because it makes a huge difference. So it's the atmosphere around you, and it's the atmosphere within the race as well. Runners are generally encouraging people, and the unique thing about the marathon is that when one person's going through a rough patch, someone else is feeling good, so they can encourage them through it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They kind of help each other along and you make friends.
Yeah, I love that. You can see it happening as well. You see other people be like, come on, let's go, let's go. And that's like, everyone just unites and it becomes one. It's not, I know it's a race. Obviously, you've got the people at the front like you that's going to be like going really fast, but then you've got the people in the middle that are just there for, as you said, the achievement of it. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to somebody that's like, someone like me, that's looking to maybe get into running or starting training for a marathon?
Well, I think starting where you are with a 10K is a great place to start, even starting with 5K, and make it a manageable plan. So set your goal, but make your goal something that really excites you. So if the marathon doesn't excite you yet, go with a 10K, go with a half marathon, go with something else and build up to that, because it is an amazing event. But I do think you have to be ready to do it. You have mm-hmm. to want to take on that challenge and put in the work to really get the most out of it. So setting yourself stepping stones is a great way. Finding a friend to do it with you is an even better way, because then you've got someone not just to motivate you in the race itself, because there will be loads of those, but it's through the training.
Yeah.
And when you're feeling tired and you think, do I really want to go out the door because it's raining and I'm supposed to do a 5 mile run and I don't know if I want to. If there's somebody waiting on the corner for you, you're far more likely to go and do that.
100%, because you don't want to let them down.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, has any other Olympians reached out for you for advice around nerves or tactics before heading to Paris?
Before into Paris, not so many around the actual tactics. I mean, I guess my husband is coaching a couple of marathon runners, so I kind of, through him, would pass advice onto them. But it's mainly just to really be confident in the place that you're at, believe in yourself at this point, because all of the training has been done. I mean, chatting to Laura Muir, she came and raced close to me a couple of weeks ago, and she's another athlete who is kind of approaching that point in her career where she's going to have to start thinking about retirement, but is also in a really good place where she's happy with her running. She's already achieved a lot of things that she perhaps didn't think she would at the start of her career, but she's still hungry to go out and achieve more. And that's also a great place to be going into an Olympic Games, happy with where you are and ready to enjoy that experience and let the Olympic atmosphere kind of bring you up a level.
You know what? Seeing you talk about it, you can just see the love and like appreciation that you've had for this sport. It's actually so lovely to see. And does that come across when you're watching the Olympics as well? Like, do you like, oh, jealous, I wish I was still back in there? Or are you just like watching it like, I used to do that, how amazing is this?
I think it's a mix. I don't think it's really, it's not jealousy, because I kind of had my time, but it's just, it's having that familiarity, because I have been there and I know what that feels like. And to see it, it's that range of emotions. So to see it for an athlete that goes phenomenally well and to see the pure joy and elation on their face, it never gets old. But it's also heartbreaking to see it when it doesn't go well as well. And to kind of, you want to reach out and be able to say to them, you know what, it doesn't always go well. That's the beauty of sport. And that's why we love it, because there are those ups and downs. But just because it hasn't gone well there doesn't mean it won't go well somewhere else and somewhere else in your life. So you kind of want to be able to reach out and give them a big hug.
Yeah.
Tell them that as well. But it's that excitement that keeps us on the edge of our seats. And that's why I'm so fortunate that in my retirement, I've been able to move on to another career and be able to kind of have a frontline seat, perhaps without as much of the physical pressure of having to deliver it on the day and prepare and train for that. But there still is a bit of pressure about getting it right, because I've got a responsibility in terms of trying to convey the races back to people at home on the television. And I've also got an amazing seat to watch it all.
Are you going to any of the Olympic events this year then? All of them, probably.
Yes, I'll be commentating with the BBC Athletics team. So on any event that's longer than 800 metres, I'll be out there commentating. So I'm really excited and looking forward to that.
I'm really excited to watch you do that, because I think anyone that you speak to or, you know, you're training or just giving your advice on or commentating, as I said, you can just see it oozes out of you. So that's going to be lovely to watch. Are you going to be cheering on anyone in particular? Do we have any favourites?
We do have some favourites. So I don't know if anyone was watching the anniversary games in the London Olympic Stadium at the weekend, but Matthew Hudson-Smith ran a phenomenal personal best, British record, European record, broke 44 seconds for the first time. So he's sending himself into Paris as a genuine medal contender in the men's 400 metres. And then in the women's 800 metres, we are basically ruling it at the moment with Keely Hodgkinson, who
unbelievable
lead. I know, and right behind her, Gemma Riki was there, and they'll be backed up by Phoebe Gill in the 800 meters, who's just 17, a phenomenal talent going to her first major championships as a senior, but right in at the Olympic Games, and really, really is one to watch. If not in these games, then for the future. But I think she will spring some surprises here as well. And then Georgia Bell was actually third in that race. She goes in the 1500 meters with Laura Muir, and men's 1500 meters is absolutely one to watch. We've got Josh Kerr, who won the world championships last time around, beat the big favourite, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who is coming into this one really wanting to defend his title, get that global title, if you like, back from Josh Kerr. And there are others in there in the mix as well. So that is going to be a phenomenal, exciting race to watch.
I couldn't believe it when I saw that the 800 metres. What's her name? Hodgkinson, is that her name?
Yes.
I was like, she's so young. Like, what the hell? It's so quick. And then her friend behind her. But once again, it's like, you know, I think when you're on the track, obviously there's that level of competition, but they were so close together, but you could see the elation just for both of them at the end, that one of them came first, one of them came second. And it's just, that was an amazing race.
Well, not only that, they ran so quickly that they are at 1, 2, and 3 in the world going into...
That
actually,
was.
Maybe 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think the Jamaican girl is actually ranked 4th going in to these Olympic Games as well. So the perfect send-up, because that's what you want. You want to go into the Olympic Games knowing you're in shape and you're ready to go. And for Keely, she is only still... I mean, I think she's only 22, maybe 23. She was 19 when she won the silver medal in the Tokyo Olympic Games, which were actually 3 years ago because of COVID. And then she's backed that up with other silver medals, but she's not actually got that gold yet on the global level. And I think she's really showing that she's in shape to be able to do that this time around.
Okay, well, hopefully she does that. Can I ask you then, you've got children. Are they runners?
When they want to be. I think it's a little bit of a pressure for them, given that both parents ran. And anyone who's a parent knows that mum doesn't really know what she's talking about. So I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to push onto them is to be physically active in some way and to find something that they're passionate about. And of course, I would love that to be athletics. And they actually, my daughter at 17 is a huge, huge Keely Hodgkinson fan. Absolutely inspired by her and Femke Bol, the Dutch athlete in the 400 meter hurdles as well, which is another exciting race to look forward to in Paris. But it's about them finding those role models, I think, and finding their passion. So they both do run. My son is really into soccer as well. My daughter was playing hockey for a while. So it's about just finding those sports, I think, and finding what works for them.
I think you've had such a well-rounded approach to life, because you've already done so much and you've still got so much ahead of you that you're now able to like give your children and other people the advice to be able to, like, even if you're not a runner, even if you're not a bloody Olympian like you, what could you say to somebody, just in short, like, how would you advise them to live a full life of absolutely, you know, achieving everything they can, but then achieving a very relaxed, wholesome, fulfilled retirement?
I would say just really think about what it is that you want to achieve in life, what your career trajectory wants to be like, but also really think about and plan, what do I want to do when I retire? How do I want to do that? And then take a step back and look at the bigger picture, almost from the outside, and say, right, a bit like a sports person would do, am I putting the right things in place for further down the line? So you can write a little spreadsheet if you want, or you can just do it in your mind, but am I putting those building blocks in place? Because I am only maybe in my 20s or my 30s, but do I need to be thinking about making sure that I've got enough there? Because in my mind, I really want to live to be 100. So I want to make sure I can live out my retirement and do everything that I want to do there in comfort, and not be worrying about whether I've got enough and not be relying on state pensions, because unfortunately, as the stats show, it's not really going to help at this point. And if you want a little bit of extra support, go to the Scottish Widows website, and they've got a lot of help and pointers on there in terms of just making sure those boxes are ticked off. Think about it. And once you've set it up, then you can relax and carry on with enjoying your life now.
Exactly. It can just run in the background. Well, listen, Paula Radcliffe, I think you are going to live to be 100. I hope I get to see it. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. You are amazing. You're so inspiring. Keep doing what you're doing. And I'll see you doing your commentary on the BBC One. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Good luck to everyone.
And I will see you guys after the break. Lots of love.
FUBAR Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of their saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can...
Oh, no, they still make it, but I just don't... Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, hola, how are you? No.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
Hello, welcome back. So, in this section, we have Dr. Faye Baghetti. Am I saying that right? Baghetti?
Yes,
okay. Baghetti. Neurology doctor and neuroscientist. Thank you so much for joining me today, Faye. How are you?
Very well. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. So, I want to talk to you about something I think about all the time. Phones. And how we have them in our hands at all times. It's like glued to me. It's like an extension of my right hand. It's the same with everyone though, isn't it? What is considered to you the worst bad digital habit? TikTok.
Yes. So I think about phones all the time too.
Do you?
And especially in researching my book for the last few years. And since publication, I think the worst digital habit that people can relate to is one that really affects our focus, and it's called a self-interruption. You're in the middle of something, you have a thought of something that you need to look up, and you essentially interrupt what you're doing. You interrupt yourself. That's why it's called the self-interruption, to go onto your phone and look up this random thought that has popped up.
Honestly. So just for everyone's clarification, Dr. Faye is the author of The Phone Fix, which is building healthy digital habits. It's around this subject, basically. And I assume you've been trying to combat using... So basically, every time I think of something I need to know the answer to, I just Google it straight away. And you're saying that rather than interrupting your thought pattern, should we maybe try and like just think of the answer rather than going straight to bloody ChatGPT?
Yes, I think that's a good idea, especially if you're in the middle of doing another important task, like a lot of people may be studying for exams or writing a really important document for work. In those cases, if you actually self-interrupt and you're actually training your brain, this is a great thing to do. You're acted on this thought, you've rewarded that thought by going onto your phone, and then your brain thinks, this is great, I want to do more of that. And what people need to do instead is just say, oh, I'll look this up in 5 minutes, and then those thoughts tend to go and you can be a little bit more focused.
Yeah, that's something that I really do struggle with. And I think it's just because we have so much accessibility to everything on our phone these days. I blame it on just not being focused and just being a bit erratic in my life. But there's always so many different things. I'm like, oh, I must do that, must do that, must do that. And, you know, one of my mentors a while ago, actually, she said to me that there's I can't remember the name of the, what it is, but basically there's a method where you set aside 25 minutes of not looking at anything and really just focus on what's in front of you. So you're almost like rewarded for getting 25 minutes done without looking at your phone. How ridiculous is that though, that we have to like reward ourselves these days? Well, I do, in order to get through anything. I'm always so distracted.
But I think what we have to realise is actually our brain is actually naturally distractible. We are meant to sort of move our attention from things to think, to sort of perceive possible threats and be able to attend to them. Actually, being focused is a much more recent part of society now that we don't live, or at least most people don't live, in any sort of immediate danger. But especially if you're very stressed, what you'll find is that your brain gets into that hyper alert, hyper vigilant state and is very, very distractible.
Oh, okay. So it's not just me. So, how bad is excessive phone usage for our health then?
So, this is a really key question. And scientists don't have a specific number to that. And that is because people do a lot of different things on their phone. For example, if you work out using an app, you know, you're following the instructions whilst you're on the gym, you're listening to a podcast, you're messaging a friend, you might be looking up the weather. That's very different to staying at home, not leaving your house and spending 8 hours on social media. And even when you're messaging people, it really depends who you're messaging. Are they a supportive friend? Are they helping you? Are they unsupportive? So I don't have a single figure to say if you spend more than X amount of hours, it'll be really bad for you. But I think people need to sort of look internally and consider, is my smartphone use disrupting my ability to sleep, my ability to focus, and is it affecting my mental health? Mm. And I think those are the three key areas of our lives that we really have to protect. But otherwise, I think let's not be so focused on the exact time.
Okay. So I think it's true, because you could spend an hour on your phone and be looking at all the wrong stuff, and that could still have just as much as an effect if somebody that spends, like I spend all day on my phone because it's where I work from, especially if I'm out and about and I don't have my laptop with me. You know, that's how I communicate with all like my team. That's how I communicate with my clients. And I actually, when I go on social media, I don't spend a lot of time scrolling, but that's something that I've had to kind of train myself not to do, because I was getting affected by, you know, when you see things that just make you feel a certain way about yourself, or, you know, just things that you don't need to see. So I've had to stop myself from doing that. So I think if you are proactively, you know, using it for the right things and not just sitting on TikTok looking at ridiculous trends, then, you know, it doesn't have to always be detrimental. So many people say that so much phone use is so detrimental, but it doesn't always have to be, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a tool and we can use it for things that help us. And one thing that I repeatedly emphasize in my book is intentional use. And even if you're doing it for entertainment or recreational purposes, I want that to be intentional. You say, okay, I've finished my work. Now I'm going to go onto TikTok and look at some videos. I don't want people's social media usage to be interrupting their work or their studying or their rest.
Yeah. The one thing that I do notice is that I find that my eyes, might sound silly, but because I'm holding my phone literally like next to my face the whole time, I'm like, is this like bad for my eyesight, or is it bad for, you know, my skin or my like my mental health, because it's like so close to me all the time?
So there are two things when it comes to that. Firstly, this kind of thing is more important in children when it comes to looking at screens, because children are rapidly developing. we need to make sure that they not only look at things close up, and that's just not phones, it's also books and things like that, but they're also looking far away, outdoors, at the sky, just so we don't get them, you know, it increases the risk of becoming short-sighted. When it comes to adults, holding your phone very close sometimes decreases your blinking rate, the amount of times that you blink, and your eyes can feel a bit dry and fatigued. So what I recommend is if you're waiting for a message or something's loading, then just take that micro break and kind of try and look really far away.
Oh, speaking of breaks then, what would you suggest is the go-to? So for someone like me, for example, that does spend pretty much all day on their phone, what would you suggest is the healthiest way to do that? Do you need to like take specific breaks every couple of hours, or, you know, what would your top tips be for me?
So I think it's very important for everybody, especially people who work on the go and from a lot of different locations, to have clear boundaries. What is work and what isn't? There needs to be a time in your day, whatever is appropriate for you, to stop working. And if a lot of your work is on social media, one of my greatest tips is to just log out after you finished work, and then you can log back in with your password the next day. You need to create that clear boundary that now I'm finished working, now I'm no longer switched on, and you can get that sort of mental recharging going on.
I like that. The only problem is that I forget all my passwords. So I won't be able to get back on. So online people claim that you shouldn't look at your phone at the first thing that you do when you wake up. It's kind of hard though, especially if it is your alarm and you see that you've got multiple messages. It's hard not to do that, I find. I'm like, don't look at it, don't look at it, don't look at it. And I do look at it. But is looking at our phones the first thing in the morning as bad for you as people say?
There is no scientific study saying it's bad. Mm. And again, it's a very individual effect. Looking at it quickly, using it as your alarm, I'm not against any of those things. But of course, if somebody finds themselves procrastinating on their phone for 45 minutes before getting out of bed, then I've got some solutions in my book to help with that. But if it's not affecting you personally, I don't think there's a lot of scaremongering out there. And I don't think we should rely on other people to tell us that we have a problem that we don't think we have.
Mm. I think I spoke to somebody recently actually, and it's dopamine. Apparently, when you first wake up in the morning, you have the most amount of dopamine that you have. And if you then spend it on your phone, basically you should use the time in the morning to, you know, practice gratitude and journal. This is what I'm doing at the moment. but just spend time with yourself to just really set yourself up for the day. And then the people say if you go on your phone, that's the first thing that you do. It's like kind of the opposite of that, because you're actually just giving out your dopamine rather than like self-focusing it on yourself.
Oh, I've done my PhD on dopamine. I've done a significant amount of research. I prescribed dopaminergic medications to patients. None of that is true.
Oh my God.
No, none of that is true. Your phone does not mess up your dopamine. There is nothing going on with dopamine first thing in the morning. In fact, it's really, really difficult to know what is happening when it comes to dopamine in humans. But the sort of dopamine situation has taken an entire life of its own in the press, and everything seems to be messing up our dopamine. I mean, sometimes we have something called, it depends on our habits first thing in the morning. For example, if you sort of get up, get dressed, get showered, you might have a productive day. But if you sort of stay in your PJs, you'll probably have a sluggish day. And that's because our brain is a bit of an association machine. It hasn't got anything to do with dopamine. But you can always, I call these in my book domino habits, because you just need to kickstart the first domino, and that kind of depends what direction your day will go in. But I don't want people to, I think we're creating harm by sort of creating too much fear around sort of neurochemicals, and that we're somehow messing them up by looking at our phone. And that can actually create a really negative mindset, because if somebody wants to pick up their phone, they'll say, oh my gosh, I've messed up my dopamine. And then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they say to themselves, I've messed up, there's no point being productive now, everything's against me. Whereas I think we need to have a little bit more of a positive mindset. I don't think it's any big deal. Let's just say you check your phone, just carry on, have a good day the rest of the day.
That is crazy. What? This is the thing with the internet. There's just so much like wealth of knowledge, and half of it's absolute balls. And, you know, I need to talk to you. Basically, I need to get your book. Guys, it's called The Phone Fix, Building Healthy Digital Habits. I assume you debunk all of these myths in there as well, and you can help us on how to reframe how we use our phone and any digital products, right?
Absolutely. And it's, my book is not about making you scared of your phone or going on some sort of digital detox. It's how to use it to work for you without affecting you badly. And actually, I think the most successful people in society at the moment are those who are able to balance their digital life really, really well, rather than becoming overcome by it or by sort of trying to crawl under a rock and trying to avoid it all.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I'm definitely going to be reading it because I think I need to find some balance with it. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'll speak to you soon. Take care,
my
love.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Take care. I think that is going to be a good one for a lot of people to read because it's true. I know that a lot of my friends are like, oh, I've been on my phone all day, you know, and they give themselves a hard time about it. But maybe it isn't as bad as it seems. If you're doing enough productivity with it, then, you know, it's not as bad, I suppose, as just sitting on it on social media all day. But anyway, talking about social media, I've got a few listener questions from you. I have, Polly asks, I saw online that an influencer said that I should be taking vitamin D supplements as there's not enough sun in the UK. Is this true? So it's not just about sun, it's about UV rays that come through, right? So we obviously do have some sort of UV come through at all times of the year, but in the winter and autumn months, there is less light time. But it doesn't mean that they're not coming through, but we do kind of need to supplement it in those colder months. So the government advice is that everybody should consider taking a daily vitamin D supplement during those months. But obviously it all depends on whether you go on holiday or, you know, if we have those very, very rare days of sunshine in our autumn months. But vitamin D does help to regulate the amount of calcium and phosphate in the body, which these nutrients are needed to keep bones, teeth and muscles healthy. So the lack of it can lead to, this is very dramatic, but, you know, bone deformities and such as rickets in children and bone pain caused by a condition called osteomalacia. Sounds very exotic, doesn't it? In adults. But that's very, very far-fetched. But all in all, I think in the winter and autumn months, you can supplement it, but don't lose your mind over doing it in the summer because we do, it might be grey outside, but there is some UV still coming through. So on that note, guys, I am going to love you and leave you there. After this question, we have Kyle asks, what are drop sets and how can I use them? So drop sets are when you're doing your set in the gym, say, for example, just go for leg extensions, right? You're doing, you can do 8 and you're at 20 kg. And then on that last one, you drop the kg down to maybe 15 or 10. And it basically just means you would then rep out until you can't do any more. And it's basically just maximizing the use of the muscle until it literally cannot do anymore. It's something called, something under fatigue. Basically just fatiguing the muscle till it can't do anymore. And that's where the pace of failure is. And that's what's going to help elevate your endurance, elevate your capacity to lift heavier, maybe the following week or the week after that. And that's what you can work with progressive overload as well. So essentially, drop sets is what it says on the tin. Do your set and then drop it down a level or two to max out, rep out until you can't do any more. And that's how you're going to see muscle mass grow. Okay, so last and not least, Ezra asks, I don't think I understand warm-up sets. Am I supposed to do a warm-up set before every new exercise or just compounds? So I would always suggest doing warm-up sets for things like hip thrusts, squats, your big compound movements, because you need to, you know, get your core in place. You need to practice your, I would always suggest like filming your first set as well, just so you can see your technique, make sure that everything is moving in the right way, and so you can check your stability. So always start off with a lighter set so you get your body moving in the correct way, basically, and then you can add your weights up to it. But for things like leg extensions or kickbacks or the smaller isolated moves, it's not really necessary to add in warm-up sets because you don't want to be wasting energy on those ones. You just want to go straight into it and challenge yourself with those. But for the bigger ones that might cause more stress on the body, then yeah, do your warm-up sets for safety and also to just set yourself up to be able to get some PBs. So now we are actually going to wrap up. I was trying to get off a little bit earlier then. So we had another amazing show. Next week has another amazing show. But in the meantime, I want you to send us some messages to at What The Health Show on Instagram. I want these messages to come through, these questions, because this is my favourite part of the show. Look, I get to talk loads to you. So make sure you send them over and drop us a follow as well, guys. It helps us grow and it helps us get on some amazing guests. So I will see you next week for that. And in the meantime, have a good one. Lots of love.